everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of 90s Horror Films. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. I'm here with
Vittorio Treppo.
All right, and Vittorio and I have done a few podcasts together. He's usually my special guest for different, especially a lot of horror films and whatnot. And so I decided that today we were going to do the 1991 film, There's Nothing Out There.
And, but there is something out there.
Is there? We'll talk about it in a second. So this movie was made for $350,000, and that time period in 1991, that was probably a good amount of money, because it would be the equivalent of like probably almost close to a million today. You know,
I'd have to check the inflation calculator.
Yeah, I haven't checked that yet, so I don't know. But it's a lot of money. A lot more than, you know, some movies are able to have. And it looked like the whole amount actually went to, you know, good use. You know, they had a nice little cabin that they got to destroy. They had a lot of really cool shit in it. So I was very impressed by the budget of this movie and where it went to. What did you think?
It was nice. I liked the way it was you know, they made a lot of use of that money. You know, I've seen much worse on a lot.
That's true.
What year was this made in?
91. Oh, he's checking. He's literally checking the inflation calculator right now to see how much it would be. I kind of want to know. I'm interested myself.
Let's see. What was the budget?
$350,000. Oh my goodness. I wonder what it's going to be. Let's find out in 2 seconds.
Actually, it's only, it's not as much as you, it's $702,998. $702,998.
Still, that's all, you know, it's a good amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, you know, double it, you know, you're.
That's double the money, yeah, pretty much. So, awesome. So, yeah. $700,000, you know, kind of like period.
Still pretty
good amount. Yeah, that's a good amount of money for a low budget film. So, I guess we could start off in the storyline. So the story is these kids are, you know, basically going out to have a good spring break weekend. I guess, or week, you know, hanging out at the cabin by the pond, you know, right, which they make a reference to later. But they go to this cabin by the pond to relax. They bring the one guy who's like, who knows so much about horror films that's all he ever talks about is different horror films and how everything that they're doing. And you would think like a guy like that would not want to go, you know, be told, oh, let's go to the cabin by the lake. No, or by the pond. Nope. I'm not going to go there. That's where mass murderers live, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so basically they have it where the main guy, his girlfriend, this other guy. Okay, so there's Mike, played by Craig Peck. There's Doreen, played by Wendy Bernards. There's Jim, played by Mark Colliver. Stacy, played by Bonnie Bowers. Nick, played by John Carhart, the third. Janet, played by Claudia Flores. David is Jeff Dacus. Sally is Lisa Grant. And then I guess the rest are random other people. But so Mike is the main guy, right? Is he the...
Mike is the main... I'm guessing Mike is the... Mike was the horror film
buff. You think so? I think he was. I think you're right. And then Jim was the main, the, I guess the other, because I guess the main guy was the horror guy.
Yeah.
Jim
was the guy. He was the guy that was. It was his parents' house, right?
Right. I'm trying to remember the names because they were said, but they were sort of. Which one's Doreen? I kept thinking Doreen was the blonde girl.
She was the main girl?
The main girl. Yeah, okay. So Doreen, then there's Jim, her boyfriend. Stacy was with Nick, right?
Yeah.
And then Janet was with David. And Janet was the chick from out of town, like out of country, out of like Brazil or something.
Yeah.
And then David was the guy with the glasses. Nick was the kind of the, I don't know. We called him the Bruce Campbell of the group, you know, had like had the jawline and all that stuff. So basically, I don't know much about more about this stuff. What do you think of the characters?
They're surprisingly pretty good. I thought they did pretty much, you know, they were better than a lot of low budget movies. It was very for the time. I remember mentioning that one of the guys wore earlier in the thing, you know, this is made in 91, and he wore a vest over his shirt, which I remember that being a style back then. And I even had that. You'll notice, like, if you watch movies of that time, like I remember It with the Tim Curry version, John Ritter wore like a vest with just a vest over the over a shirt. And I remember that was the thing back in the day. I even wore one.
I can clearly say that was not a 90s thing, really. Maybe early 90s, but not a 90s thing from what I remember. I never wore a vest, you know. I guess, I don't know, maybe I wasn't cool enough.
It was just the style.
Yeah. Mike was the big horror guy who, and I actually, I like at first you get kind of annoyed by him, you know, like you're just like, all right, come on, you can stop, you know, but he sort of becomes like the voice of the movie of like trying to warn people. And from what I've understood, kind of Scream did that as well. You know, they tried to do this thing where they would, where they would give the rules of surviving a horror film. And this sort of kind of did that first, you know, like they all of a sudden were telling people, you know, don't go in the woods, don't make out, don't, you know, go into the pond, you know, skinny dip. Cause, you know, and what is it that you were saying, like sort of earlier, that the punk kids who come in and like randomly skinny dip, which I think was there for gratuitous nudity mainly.
Oh, of course.
But were also there, you thought that they had really no point, right?
They were kind of, it's kind of the, reminds me of Friday the 13th part 3, where you have the, like the biker gang come in and get killed by Jason. They're not much spoilers, but you never see the punks again. Nothing happens to them.
Well, there can be spoilers. It's okay.
Nothing happens to them. They're there for like 5 minutes and there's TNA and they leave. So there's nothing.
Well, what I was trying to explain was they were talking about this was the camp by the lake, right? Yeah. And they're like, no, it's the cabin by the pond, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you look at movies like Evil Dead, which we mentioned Bruce Campbell, you know, or whatever, that's the cabin by the pond or whatever.
Wasn't that Eli Roth movie, what, Cabin by the Lake?
No, Cabin Fever was Eli Roth.
Okay.
You know, but I think it was a cabin by the lake.
Yeah.
There has been movies where the cabin by the lake, but just, like, just the idea is like they were trying to take two different movies. So maybe there's a whole another movie that that Rolf Kinefsky could have done with those punk kids getting killed by a camper at the, you know, at the camp.
Yeah, I agree. I will say that out of all these people here, though, is there's one person on this group who plays the lead punk. His name is Cy Vorace. And apparently Cy has gone on to be quite the Hollywood writer. He wrote Bulletproof Monk, and he wrote the Kung Fu Panda movies. And I think Robin Hood with Russell Crowe.
Really? Robin Hood?
Robin Hood.
That's funny.
Let me see if there's what else. Let's see. Kung Fu Panda. A bunch of stuff.
What other stuff?
He wrote the animated Nightfall for Batman. The animated Batman Nightfall.
Ah.
He's written some big names.
Well, good. Good for him. He's probably got the biggest career out of everybody.
Yeah.
I was telling Vittorio earlier that Rolf Kanevsky, the director, went on to do a lot of Lifetime movies. He writes for Lifetime a lot. And he's really good. Like, he's a great writer. This was a really well-written movie.
It was. It really was good, well written. The acting's a little wooden, but hey, you can't expect it. It's actually definitely we watched it. It's a Troma release on this Blu-ray.
Well, it's Vinegar Syndrome, but they like still kept the Troma thing because I think Vinegar Syndrome, who put it out, had some kind of deal with Troma, so they could release some of Troma's movies that were like sort of the cult movies, like Graduation Day and this movie and things like that, that are sort of famous for being kind of cheesy in a way a little bit. Yeah. I mean, this movie is very cheesy.
Oh, it is, but how to put this? There's fresh cheese in the refrigerator, and then there's cheese that's been left out on the counter for 7 days. You know, this is the fresh cheese in the refrigerator.
So we have a show that Paul and I do called Blue Cheese, right? It's stinky movies on Blu-ray.
Uh-huh.
So it's Blue Cheese, BLU cheese, yeah. And there's a bit where, if it's good, it's Gouda, you know.
Uh-huh.
If it's okay, like mediocre, it's just cheddar, and if it's a stinky movie, it's blue cheese.
Okay.
You know, it's a stinky thing of blue cheese. So, that's what we do, and I think that's hilarious because I think honestly this would be Gouda. This would definitely be up there as a very good film, especially on Blu-ray. It looked beautiful. The shots were fucking amazing. The cinematography was great.
What else? What else on the movies has this guy done? Do you know?
Rolf. He directed. I know he directed a couple Tiffany Shepis movies. He's done a lot of comedies too, like not just horror, you know, and drama, you know. But he does. Like I said, like he's mainly doing the Lifetime stuff these days. He did a movie called The Black Box that I really liked. And it was a Black Box, Black Room. Black Room. It was like I remember watching it going, "Oh my god, this is really freaky." So he does some really good flicks, you know. But this is like one of my favorite movies from him. But if you guys also want to see a really good movie from him, check out the movie The Hazing.
Yeah, I would actually definitely go see, you know, he definitely, I don't know how to describe him. I mean, he's got some great shots, surprisingly good movie. I'm just trying to think of an analogy. Maybe like David Dakota.
Oh no, do not compare him to David Dakota. That's
I'm just thinking somebody who's kind of maybe like Jim Wynorski or
I think he's better than them. Like I'm not saying that they're bad. They're not bad. I mean they're definitely
I kinda like the fact that he has gone on to Lifetime, which is at least
David Dakota does that too.
Oh, he has done Lifetime?
Yeah. Games? And I don't know if Jim, I don't think Jim Wynorski would ever do Lifetime because he can't have nudity in Lifetime.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but.
Can't they have like Lifetime After Hours?
No, they haven't had that yet. I don't know. That might happen one day.
Alternate Lifetime?
That could be the channel.
Maybe. Alternative Lifetime. I don't know. You just see like, yeah, maybe. Midnight Lifetime After Hours. I kind of like that title.
Yeah,
but I don't think they'll do that. Remember when they used to have USA Up All Night
with Rhonda Shear? USA Up All Night.
Yeah, I wonder if this movie ever was on there because this feels like the type of movie that they would have put on It should have been if it wasn't. The biggest thing is, I mean, this is an independent film, like, completely. This is not made by a studio. This isn't, you know, your classic 90s made from a studio horror film. This is a really good, fresh, kind of cool, like, my favorite thing is the special effects with what was that thing? I always kept thinking it was a frog, but I don't know really. Well, what
the guy always kind of made fun of it because it was like, you know, he was the main guy was always kind of remarking that, you know, what is it? Is it like a baby that is born deformed, an alien from outer space? You know, it comes from that. They're kind of making fun of that whole era with like Basket Case and It's Alive, and you know, you don't know what's going on. You know, this monster here is doing something and we don't know. And
yeah, absolutely, we have no idea whether what kind of horror thing it is, you know. But it's definitely it's got to be an alien, you know. It doesn't ever come down from space. You don't see that, you know, thing, but you know, it's like already here, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. Although I will say another part of the movie that kind of was curious is early on they were always mentioning bears, and I think it would have been cool if they had a bear come in and fight the alien.
That would have cost another $100,000.
Not necessarily. You could have had a guy in a bear suit.
I mean, at this rate.
Well, the thing too is you have to realize there was a lot of shots where you just had like a tentacle just kind of going up. Mm-hmm. How hard would it have been to have like just a bare hand? Just go, and you just like see it like club something and there were scenes where, you know, you could see it kind of like getting thrown around, you know, where you can just obviously people throwing the thing around. But, you know, obviously, you know, you could do that just to get like a bare hand or somebody like put a giant hairy glove on and just go like,
well, they have to say when they're doing it.
That's right.
Or it's not a bear.
No, well, actually, how hard could it have been to just like sample like a bear roar and just loop it in?
I mean, at this rate, these kind of movies, there's got to be like a fake, you know, guy in a creature costume. It was definitely a puppet for this one.
Yeah.
And it was sort of fun. And then it also shot things out of its eyes and control people's minds. I mean, that was fun.
Yeah. The design kind of reminded me a little bit of, it's one of those early Roger Corman movies of, like Creature from the Haunted Sea, I think.
Whoa. I think I've seen that. I think I saw that last 31 Days of Indie Horror. I'm not sure. I know it's, they're all like sort of all of those movies sort of kind of become the same, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of this movie was getting at. Like that, you know, you like he was saying stuff like you could, you know, it doesn't matter what any of this is because it's here. It's killing everybody now. Let's figure out how to stop it. But then he was also comparing it to all these different things or whatever, all these different movies he's seen. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like Rolf Kanevsky, who wrote it, was like, let me just put in a you know, combination of everything I've seen in every other horror movie and then just we mention it. We talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I completely thought that. You know, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought so too. It was just trying to, you know, it was an early kind of it was kind of an early sort of like Scream where, you know, it's just let's try to be very meta and just introduce all this other stuff and blah, blah, blah.
So I have this theory that when Kevin Williamson was writing Scream, right, he has this big talk about how he was in a house babysitting or house sitting or something, and he was, you know, and he kept thinking he was watching horror films. So he kept thinking, you know, what if, you know, whatever, you know, what if I lived in a horror film? What if this became a horror film, right? Mm-hmm. And he might have been watching this movie, you know, when that thought came, because that might have crossed his mind of like, I wonder, you know, right? And then he just subconsciously put a character like, you know, like Mike and it became Randy, you know, the geek who, you know, because if you notice that movie, like, the two guys, I don't know if you've seen Scream in a while, but there's Stu and there's Billy, right? Mm-hmm. And both of them have girlfriends. And then there's Randy. He's the odd one out. It's very similar, you know? So, like, he had to have, like, known about this movie. There's no way that he was like, oh, no, I've never heard of this movie or something, you know?
I'm sure if you interviewed him sometime, he...
Nope, I guarantee you would shut me down in 2 seconds if I brought this movie up. You know, I'm sure he does not like talking about, you know, a movie that he basically, in a way, ripped off, you know? Which is sort of not cool, you know?
Well, it's Hollywood, so it's an homage.
Yeah, well, we will be talking about Scream in 90s horror films at some point. It will be later because we're doing this one right now, but like at one point I will be talking about that because
it's really funny because Scream is people. I'm a Wes Craven fan, but I've never really. It's kind of funny, like Scream and The Matrix are two movies that came out that people just raved about, and I saw them once and I was just like, meh.
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 Well, I will say that Scream was the movie that sort of that I watched as I was in high school when it came out, and I wanted, you know, I became a fan of it because it wasn't scary, you know, like it wasn't terrifying. This movie is definitely not scary either. This is funny, you know, and that's what it was. It was funny. And I think that's what drew me to it, you know. That it was sort of a comedy and not a, you know, horror film or whatever. But yeah, so that movie really like kind of shaped my life. But now that I watch this, I'm like, damn, I wish I had seen this too, you know, at the same time. Then I would have had two movies like this that would have kind of shaped my horror loving, you know, thing. But now if you do it, it gets annoying. You know, when people try to put the character in that talks too much, people are like, oh, you sound like Randy from Scream, you know? They were never like, oh, you sounded like Mike from There's Nothing Out There.
Who played Randy in Scream?
Jamie Kennedy.
Okay. Yeah, I could understand people just getting annoyed whenever Jamie Kennedy talks.
Sort of. I don't know. I like him. I like the movie, but I get it, you know, because it's just one of those things. However, this movie, the guy just kept going on and on and on with the horror stuff. After a while, I was just like, come on, let's talk about something else, you know? Like, we get it, we're in a horror film. But they're so, like, it's such a comedy about it. Like, they even have the boom, like, fall out. And at first you thought, like, wait, what? Like, was that really supposed to happen? And then he grabs the boom and, like, swings from it. So it's like, it knows it's a movie, you know, like, and I think that's a little bit of the charm.
I think that was the only real part that really kind of did that with the boom. I thought that was the only one the only part where you really had that in the movie.
Right. So were you saying it needed more of that or something or what?
I don't know. It just seems like an odd random thing. And it happens like towards the end of the movie.
Well, you know, if you really think about the movie has some more odd, random incidences, you know, like the punk people, you know, and things like that. They just kind of show up and just kind of, it's sort of being there to be either a cliche-ish kind of thing, showing you the skinny dipping and, you know, whatnot. But, you know what I mean? Like, it's just so random shit sometimes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And at least it's consistent, you know, and being like random. And everything. So let's talk a little bit more about the we got to talk about the cinematography. You liked the music.
Yeah, I really liked the music. Both there was like some incidental music that they used various, you know, if there's like a scary scene, it's like dun 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 dun, you know, just very cool stuff. And then there's just like all these random bands that are really, you know, and this is a New York shot movie, and you can just tell that, you know, they the filmmaker really loved all these just random New York bands, and just I couldn't even get him to come up on Shazam. You know, it's you know, it's it, I mean, it's just literally just like random people that, and I was listening to it, I was like, man, this is really good.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. Like, a lot of times I was just like, oh my God, this is actually really good music. And I think there was times where just enjoying the music for the, you know, most part or whatever, like some of the songs.
It was. I really enjoyed the music.
Yeah, so there's the music, there was the cinematography, the writing was great, the direction was amazing, and the acting. You said there's some people that are a little wooden. I didn't really find too many people wooden. I think that they were characters of themselves, you know, or whatever.
I didn't think they were that wooden. I will say, though, it's kind of odd. Mark Colliver reminded me of, he kind of reminded me of John Cameron Mitchell.
Who's that?
He was the guy who did Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, wait, he directed it, or he
directed and starred in it, and he directed, starred, and wrote Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
I've heard of him, so like, I don't think I've ever seen Hedwig, which I don't really like. I've seen bits and pieces of it that I'm just like, I'm good.
That was a I need to watch that. That's one of those movies that I think it's on Criterion now, but it's like one of those movies that came out and was just like, boom. It was like, I think it came out in the early 2000s, and it was just one of those movies that just like set the whole, you know, everyone was talking about it.
Well, you know what? That's good. It was something that I wasn't that interested in to begin with, and, you know, I probably won't watch it, but, you know, that doesn't mean, I mean, who knows? I may check it out at some point.
Yeah, it's well, it's definitely a thing. I know John Cameron's done some other stuff too.
I've heard he just did something new or whatever. I don't know what it is, but
you can look it up on the interwebs, and all your information.
The stuff they really didn't have in the 90s to be able to do, like they were stuck in that house with just that phone, and I guess they were never able to call for help or whatever. Then they find out later they could have just turned on the alarm and the cops would have come.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's what I would have thought anyway, is like, you know, like, isn't that most alarms go straight to the cops, you know, if they're on long enough, you know, right?
Yeah. You know, this is, and especially, you know, it's probably, it was a good looking place, you know, the house. So I'm assuming that the cops were, you know, if you had an alarm and it went off, the cops would be there pretty soon.
They said about a half hour, which kind of sucks when you're in the middle of nowhere and the cops take, it has to take the cops a half hour to get to you.
Well, something else that kind of makes me, interesting time thing is the guy leaves, you know, Mark Colliver at one point leaves to go, cause there's, I guess, a burst pipe. So he's got to go get the plumber. And he leaves, and then all this other stuff happens, and then he comes back later, and it's dark, and you wonder how long was he gone, because it, you know, it must have taken him I estimate from about the time that he left to the time he comes back in quote unquote real life, I think that would have been at least a good like 2-3 hours.
And then they called the plumber, and the plumber came. And they ended up stealing the plumber's truck at the end.
Yeah.
But you were even thinking, why don't you just take the plumber's truck now? But I'm glad that they didn't, because then they got to destroy the monster. The monster wouldn't be following them, or, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know the monster would have been following them if they had taken the truck. You know, so they still would have to destroy the thing. So it made sense that they went back, destroyed the thing, threw it in the fucking oven, which was smart, you know, or whatever, destroyed it, you know, did everything they could to, like, you know, get rid of it. And then they got into the truck, left. And then the woman from earlier, we didn't even talk about her. Like, in the beginning of the movie, there's a girl that's, like, attacked by this thing, and we're not sure if she lived or died.
She gets in a car accident, and she runs off the road, and then, you know, it literally, like, falls on top of the car. And, you know, you're wondering, like, okay, is she, like, the first victim or whatever? And then it just pans out, and you don't know what's going to happen. And then later on, she shows up.
She shows up at the end to, like, wave them down and say that she's been in forever. And they're just all worried that she could be this thing, and we didn't know, you know, they don't know. And, like, the first second I was like, have you learned anything? Like, don't pick up a stranger in the middle of the woods. She's in the middle of the woods. You know, I'm sorry, but yeah. She's fucked, you know, at that rate. Because, you know, like, maybe somebody else will, maybe the police will come find her because the things was going off, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, you can send Sting on a search party.
Yeah, you can send out a search party for her, but, like, it was sort of funny that they were asking all these questions and they threw her out.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the best parts about it. But aside from that, it was, you know, this whole, I mean, even with that, this movie was a pretty damn good movie. I really enjoyed it. There's been some, in fact, so far, there's been some fun movies for 90s horror, and I'm hoping that it keeps up for this year. You know, I think that's about it. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention?
Not. I think I'd be interested to see what else, like, some of these other people have done. I mean, like I said, I think Cy Vorus is that one guy that you see in independent movies that winds up going on to, like, doing a lot of.
Well, he was like names. The lead punk.
Yeah, he was just like the lead punk, and he wound up, although it was weird, like, he was wearing a jock strap, which I can't imagine, like, punks, that's not a very punk rock.
That's, I don't know how many punks actually wear jock straps, but you know what, I don't think he really was a punk in real life.
He probably wasn't.
But it was funny when the punks came out of the van and they were like, there was smoke coming out of it, and it was like I said, it was like a clown car, because, like, all of a sudden, like, one person would come out, two people, three people, four people. It's like,
literally out of this Toyota minivan came out like six people.
Yeah. I think it was more than that. It felt more than that, like eight, you know, but maybe it was six. It felt like a lot because they just all kept coming out of the thing. Yeah. I was like,
you know what? Actually, speaking of which, like, they came up in the regular people came up in a Ford, and they scrunched, like, how many people did they fit in that car?
I don't know. It was like, wait, because it was like, one, two, it was five people. Five people in that one little car, too. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, what is it? Mike was the main guy.
Yeah.
There was Doreen and Jim, Stacy and Nick, Janet and David.
Wait, seven people.
Three, four, seven, yeah.
Seven people in that one little car. Goddamn. Yeah.
I'm trying to think what kind of car it was, because it looked like I'm trying to remember my 80s Fords, but it wasn't a station wagon. It didn't look like a body shape for, like, a Taurus, which is like a bigger sedan. So it didn't look like an Escort, but it didn't look like a Taurus. So right. I'm thinking it was another, maybe there was a, maybe Taurus had a different design at one point, but I don't remember.
I don't know. Interesting. I guess we would have to find out through the manufacturer.
Yeah.
But no, that's crazy. I forgot the seven people coming out of one car. And then, like I said, I think there's eight that came out of the fucking, you know. So it's like
I remember something like that years ago. I drove down to North Carolina with in a Hyundai Excel with six people in a Hyundai Excel.
Nice. Well, it didn't sound very fun.
No. That's where you want. That's where, you know, you want to get, you know, for folks looking to buy their first cars for road trips and everything, I would advise, like, the biggest car you can get.
Like a van?
Even a minivan. People keep shouting, people keep hating on minivans, but, you know, they've got the space.
I got a minivan.
Hey, that's...
that's what I drive.
Why about me?
I know. Like, I'd rather have one. I mean, it's got more space. I can actually move shit, you know, like, I can... It's better.
they're surprising. Minivans are surprisingly underrated.
They are. But I guess it's not the cool thing to be driving. That's the thing, like sports cars or some shit.
Now you can get, but you know, looking, I was looking at Kias their like minivan or whatever like starts out at like, what is it, like 36 or something?
36,000.
Damn. And but it's got like, it's loaded with like options and stuff and whatnot. And you know, you look at trucks, and trucks are, you know, you can spend so much more than on those.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm thinking that I'm gonna stay with my minivan.
Okay, sounds good.
So yeah, so I guess all in all, this was just a fun little flick. Like, I wouldn't, you know, I would definitely recommend this film to people who are, I don't know, just fans of 90s horror that like kind of like, it starts out looking like it's gonna be a slasher movie, right?
Yeah.
And then obviously it kind of takes a different turn and becomes a creature feature, and a sci-fi creature feature.
Science fiction
creature feature. So that's, you know, that's what I would say with it. And then, so if you're expecting like a slasher flick about a bunch of kids in the woods that are getting killed by mass murder, that's not it. But if you're looking for like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like Gremlins kind of thing.
Do you think they kind of tried to subvert the trope, I guess, by having it a alien instead of like a slasher?
I think because they obviously knew in the beginning with the girl like dreaming about being in the video store and then getting attacked, that it was supposed to like make it look like it was gonna be, you know, a bunch of kids and you know, being slaughtered by mass murder. And then they subverted it by making her like crash and then get attacked by a creature in the woods.
So speaking of which, was that whole part in the video store in the beginning a dream?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like her, I guess, a random dream she was having while she was driving. Like, how did she keep driving?
I fell asleep at the wheel, but like, how was she able to go that far?
Because I kept thinking it was going to go into like a, that it was going to go into like a, another dream. Like, she was dreaming that she was about to get...
One of those things where you're dreaming and then you wake up, but you're still in it. You're like in another dream, and then you wake up from that dream.
Like Inception type shit.
Yeah.
You know, but no, it was literally, she was in the car and then she crashed the car at night. But I'm like thinking, how could you keep going driving when you're daydreaming? Like, there's, I don't think you can really do that. You know?
Nope.
All right, well, I guess that's about it. That about covers this movie. Please check back for, you know, next month. We're going to do a whole new movie and a new whole new guest. So thank you, Vittorio, for being on this season's 90s horror. Maybe we'll get you on 80s horror when that comes out again.
Oh, that would be great. I like 80s horror.
I know you love 80s horror more than... 90s horror, probably.
Well, I grew up in the 80s, so 70s, yeah. And the 80s, so
I grew up in the 80s and 90s, but mainly the 90s, you know. Yeah. So that's my kind of jam.
Everyone's got their own personal things.
Yeah, so. Their own personal subgenre, especially in the horror business.
Yeah.
But this was sort of requested by the director. Rolf, you know, wanted us to talk about this film, and I thought, well, you know what, this movie doesn't get enough love. I don't feel like you never even heard of it, right?
I've never heard of it. You're definitely gonna, next time you talk to Rolf, to tell him he did a really good job.
Oh yeah, he's gonna hear this, so he'll know.
Shout out to Rolf
Kanefsky.
You did a good job. Keep on doing whatever movies you're doing, and just keep on trucking.
I gotta watch his Lifetime movies. I swear, I bet they're just as fun as this.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I haven't seen a Lifetime movie in ages.
That's an acquired taste. Like, not a lot of people like them.
Are they geared more towards like the younger audience, or like what's their audience, or is it just?
I don't know what their demographic is. Honestly, hey Rolf, if you know what their demographic is, let us know, because we have no idea.
I'm just trying to think of how, you know, because you have your regular soap operas and, you know, your telenovelas and all that stuff going on. And then I don't know how, if Lifetime is, like, if you have, like, young, like, teenage girls watching it, or, you know, I just don't know how that demographic. I mean, I'm sure they have a demographic, but you know, or is this just like, do people just watch Lifetime in general, like overall, or like do certain movies have a different genre? I mean, demographic. I don't know.
No, I don't know either. Guess we'll have to find out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys once again. Check us back next month and join us for another 90s horror films. Bye.
Bye.